This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 27th of November, 2020. Hello. And welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. Anne Brew has edited the extracts this week. And so we'll begin with our usual regular notices. The first is to say that if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please first check that the box is plugged into the mains before you telephone Liz LeGreece on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229. As you listen to the recording, remember that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And one more note for those of you with computers or tablets. As well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, most recent first on the list. And now, let's take a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle. As an introduction, I am your presenter, Barbara Kearns, and today I'm accompanied in the studio by a reader, Sir Richard Martin.
Hello.
Now, moving on to the news. Here are the headlines. The battle begins for Royal Down. Developer could appeal water garden decision. And secret switch on brings cheer. And the first headline story from you, Richard.
Thank you. The battle begins for Royal Down. Opposition is already mounting to fight the biggest planning application in Winchester history. Local farmer Nick Russell is proposing 5,000 homes on farmland between Hursley and Oliver's Battery, sparking dismay. As reported in the Chronicle last week, the scheme has been called Royal Down Garden Village and would see homes, a new access road linking to Badger Farm Road, two primary schools, a secondary school, health centre, park and ride, solar farms and land for employment. Last week, many local politicians and residents expressed horror at the plans, which are more than twice the size of Barton Farm, King's Barton. Now, organisations have expressed their concerns, including the Butterfly Conservation and the campaign to protect rural England. Butterfly experts are deeply disappointed and worried by the plans to build 5,000 homes between Winchester and Hursley. The UK charity Butterfly Conservation has recorded 38 different species in the Royal Down area since 1988. Its members also manage the Yew Hill Nature Reserve, just a stone's throw from the proposed development. Steve Wheatley, Regional Conservation Manager for South East England, told the Chronicle, "The charity is deeply disappointed and worried by this proposal. The charity has in its database records of more than 72,000 butterflies that have been recorded in this area since 1988. This includes 38 different butterfly species, which is almost two-thirds of all butterfly species found in the UK. At least six of these are priority species, protected as species of principal importance under Section 41, under the Natural Environment and Rural Communities Act 2006. This landscape also supports downland specialists such as the beautiful Adonis blue butterfly, the Chalk Hill blue, and the dark green fritillary." Mr. Wheatley continued, Butterfly Conservation has been managing the Yew Hill Nature Reserve immediately adjacent to the threatened area and monitoring butterfly populations there since 1990. This year alone, more than 3,500 butterflies were recorded on the reserve, including more than 1,000 meadow browns and 200 chalk hill blues. The countryside charity, CPRE Hampshire, is also concerned about the plans. Caroline Dibden, Hampshire Vice President, said, "We'll be arranging to visit the site as soon as allowed, but our first thoughts are that this represents the worst type of car-dependent sprawl. It is a completely inappropriate location, in open countryside, not related to any mass public transport hubs, and will likely lead to a significant adverse impact on climate change." The charity is also concerned that Royal Down would be the first step in fully developing the countryside between Winchester and Southampton. Ms. Dibden added, "It would be a first step in the eventual coalescence of Winchester with Southampton, which is something we've long feared. CPRE Hampshire has therefore been campaigning for this area, amongst others, to be designated as a South Hampshire Green Belt, which is a policy designed to protect the separation of settlements and to encourage urban regeneration." Royal Down is detailed in a glossy leaflet available online. An official planning application has not yet been submitted. Meanwhile, councillors met on Monday evening for the local plan advisory group. The council is drawing up its new local plan. It heard that in February-March there will be another statutory call for sites when the authority asks landowners for suggestions. Councillors say they are hampered by not knowing what their housing targets are going to be. The government has recently published a white paper for a radical overhaul of planning. The district would see a sharp increase in the number of new houses it would be expected to accommodate.
Developer could appeal water garden decision. The battle over proposals to build on a Winchester beauty spot is over. But will the developer start a planning war? Alan Stone has not yet decided whether he will appeal the City Council's decision to refuse his water garden plans. He had been seeking permission to build a house on the site next to the cathedral. The scheme quickly became one of the most controversial the city has ever seen, with 1,046 people publicly objecting. When asked if Mr. Stone will appeal, his agent, Richard Lowe, told the Chronicle, "He has 6 months to decide." Hampshire Garden Trust, which lodged an objection, has responded to the plans being refused. Chairman Ted Wake said, "We are very pleased that Winchester City Council so decisively rejected this planning application, which, if allowed, would have destroyed the water-close garden. That over 1,000 objections were made demonstrates how much the residents of Winchester love and value this peaceful and tranquil place, created by Sir Peter Smithers as his legacy to the city. The message is loud and clear. How can we now ensure the future of this garden?" A spokesperson for the City of Winchester Trust added, "Winchester City Council has turned down the application to build a house in the much-loved garden adjacent to Water Close. A record number of objections, over 1,000 to the application, demonstrates clearly how strongly city residents feel about the garden. Only one comment supporting the application was received." The planning officer's report and the council's decision notice state in detail the reasons for the refusal. The application was deemed to fail to comply with a significant number of policies, including buildings conservation, archaeology, ecology, flood risk and tree protection. The water garden was created by Sir Peter Smithers, who served as Winchester MP from 1950 to 1964. It features a pond and classical statue underneath a magnolia tree.
secret switch-on brings cheer. Winchester's Christmas lights were switched on in secret due to COVID-19. The BID, we're not actually told who they are, had already confirmed that it would not be telling people when the switch-on would take place, as they did not want to risk large crowds and the potential spread of coronavirus. Last Thursday, the BID team officially turned on the illuminations with a handful of people looking on as they wandered down the high street. Sarah Davis, Projects and Operations Manager, said, "We're delighted to have switched on the city's Christmas lights and helped spread some festive joy during these challenging times. When the current national COVID-19 restrictions end on the 3rd of December, we will be launching the Winchester Nutcracker Christmas Trail, a self-guided walk around the city centre to encourage local people to discover more of Winchester this festive season."
Thank you. Now we'll go on with the death notices and Richard will follow with Christian comment. The death notices. Turner, Jill, passed away peacefully in hospital after a long illness on the 3rd of November 2020 at the age of 79. Harley, Marjorie Violet, née Pot, passed away peacefully on Wednesday, the 11th of November 2020, at Southampton General Hospital after a fall at home, aged 100. Hart, Anne Patricia, née Hobday, died peacefully at home with her family by her side on 17th of November 2020. Mason, Patricia Olive, known as Pat, from Burselton, Curdridge and Rownhams, passed away at Southampton General Hospital on the 3rd of November 2020, aged 88. Smith, William Ronald Harry, Ron, passed away peacefully at Winchester Hospital on Tuesday the 10th of November 2020, aged 84. Snook, Valerie Jean, née Maxwell, passed away peacefully at home on the 17th of November 2020. Thatcher, Nellie Evelyn, passed away in hospital on the 18th of November 2020, aged 94. Trivett, Jill, Nanny, passed away on the 8th of November, aged 48.
And this week's Christian comment comes from Liz Tatham, and it's entitled, "God Has Been Awake This Year." Last Sunday was the Feast of Christ the King. It's the last Sunday of the Church's liturgical year, the Sunday before Advent. This time last year, we were looking forward to preparing for Christmas, with family and friends, the Christmas market, coach loads of visitors to the city, the ice rink, shopping, cooking, and all the things we associate with this festive time. Activities that bring light into our lives as the nights draw in and we seek comfort from each other and reassuring rituals and events. Which of us could have foreseen where we would be this year? Some people may have, but theirs were voices crying in a wilderness, in a world where the human race is invincible, can conquer all. Well, we didn't, and we've had a very difficult year. Some of us have adjusted and found new ways of being, and others have struggled. We do now have the good news of a vaccine, the work of human ingenuity and science, which we hope and pray will bring us back to some level of normality. Whilst we wait, perhaps we can remember that Christ is King of creation, which includes our world and everything in it. We've been brought to a place of humility and dependence. That dependence has been on each other, people we don't know who make decisions and research and develop on our behalf. Some of those people have become household names and come into our living room through television on a regular basis. I'm not alone in having prayed for them, whatever their beliefs about which I don't even know. many people have been aware of our dependence on God, on his mercy and intervention. Sometimes in the last 8 months, it has felt like he has fallen asleep. But I expect it's not so. He's been awake and alive in our lives, and his spirit has been moving among us in the human race. We've all been brought to a level place, and we will remain there until the vaccine proves its worth, we hope. So, in this season of Advent, we can truly wait in faith and trust. We can see more clearly the light of the King who is yet to be born at Christmas. We can be aware of the mystery of his incarnation, God becoming human, his birth, and all the wonderful scripture narratives that tell of his coming. Try the first two chapters of Luke's Gospel, which not only tell the Advent and Christmas events, but also move into his early life, and we see him as a child with the protection of his parents, which every child needs. Wait then. Take comfort in the light of Christmas to come. Allow the dimming of artificial lights and events to illuminate the reality and wonder of Christmas and the joy and hope it offers all of us.
Lovely. Thank you, Richard. There are quite a mixed range of subjects in the letters to the editor this week. We've selected some of the best for you, so, shall I give Richard a break and I'll kick us off then? Unite on Garden. This is from Eileen Berry. Sir, after seeing the beautiful picture in the Hampshire Chronicle, November the 12th, of the water gardens, I felt compelled to add my dismay at the thought of this being developed for a house. There are so many things that are so wrong that have happened in the past with regards to development in the city. I would not like to see this added as another mistake. The gentleman that bought this paid £100,000 with a promise that it would not be developed. In all honesty, he should not have been able to have mentioned that fact. My meaning being, it should have been protected. In fact, the city council could have bought this, or indeed the cathedral could have bought this, because once again a beauty spot of tranquillity is being threatened. We are reading also on the front page of the Chronicle from Kim Gottlieb, Winchester deserves better. Well, you could say all you supporters of Winchester deserves better. Well, we all deserve to keep this little gem. And you should come behind and give your support against any development of these beautiful gardens. Or is it too small for you? I'd like to say one warning that has been passed down through history with regards to the developers coming in en masse to develop different parts of Winchester. It's ludicrous, because together we stand, divided we fall. That was from Eileen Berry, Priors Dean Road, Week, Winchester.
And still on the subject of the water garden, this letter is entitled Putting Profit First. Sir, it's immensely good news that so many people from Winchester and the wider world objected to the proposal to build on the lovely water garden off Colebrook Street, and to see the resounding list of reasons why Winchester City Council's planners have felt it should not go ahead. I am particularly pleased that the Chronicle printed the text of the objection from Amelia Smithers, daughter of the designer and original owner of the garden. She makes it very clear that her father intended the garden to give pleasure to passers-by and to the widest population. It's amusing to read that Amelia, aged 5, had to be fished out after falling into the water. Apart from being a play place for the children, the garden can really only have been a responsibility, requiring maintenance and attention. But her parents didn't think of it as a financial asset to be realised. After the Smithers family moved to Switzerland, by the early 1970s, Colebrook House and its semi-detached garden had passed to the Calcutts, who continued to maintain it for the benefit of the public. How sad, then, that Lady Calcutt's heir should seek to profit by putting the garden on the market immediately he'd inherited it, and that his buyer should seek to profit even more by building on it, especially at this time when people need open space and beauty more than ever. Countless people enjoy the beauty and tranquillity of the garden. It's essential it should be protected from further attempts at development. This is not a matter of NIMBYism or of protecting privilege. It's about protecting the public good and ensuring that the generous spirit of its maker can continue to lift the spirits of anyone who happens upon this unique corner of Winchester. This from Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
And this from Kim A. Gottlieb. Boss should go. Sir, 6 years ago this week, nearly 2,000 Winchester residents attended the now legendary Winchester March. It took place 2 weeks before the planning committee met to decide the Henderson scheme, which, sadly, it approved. Other causes joined the march, but we all cried, "We want change." In the period since, little within the City Council has changed. With regard to the major development, it still lacks the skills, experience and flair to manage projects in a proficient way. Irrespective of the colour of the administration, Station Approach, Silver Hill, the Bar End Depot and others have been dismally directed. The loss of a judicial review in respect of Station Approach in 2019 corroborates that no lessons were learned from the council's failure in the High Court in 2015, Silver Hill. Next spring, the ribbon will be cut on the new sports centre, and praise should be given to those who did the hard work. However, no amount of celebration can disguise the potentially disastrous nature of the financial structure underlying the project, or the reduced size of the sports hall, which leaves Winchester unable to house all its clubs or compete with Eastleigh when hosting sporting events. The biggest barrier to constructive change is, in my view, the council's chief executive, Laura Taylor. My own engagement with her has, at times, been bizarre. Even though I was a councillor who sat on the relevant committee, I was denied a copy of the Sports Centre operator contract and even access to the architect's drawings to review in between meetings. In the case of Station Approach, Ms. Taylor's team just spent more good money after bad, and their answer to the depot site and to Silver Hill is to sell them off. To help make the misguided decision to sell its crown jewels, the council has paid many hundreds of thousands of pounds to consultants in an opaque and, I believe, a fundamentally undemocratic process. Winchester still deserves better, and it still needs change. I believe that a new chief executive is the way to achieve it. And that's from Kim A. Gottlieb of East Stratton.
Well, let's keep up the spirit of complaint, shall we, before we get to Christmas. Simon Lever says, never forgiven. Sir, Winchester's residents who adore the city's historical heritage, proximity to pristine countryside, rivers and hills, will be appalled that the reckless plan for Royal Down is once again being promoted as a panacea for the changing way people will want to live in the future. On the contrary, the plan is totally the opposite, being purely for profit without any genuine and honest consideration regarding the extremely negative impact. Winchester's population of some 40,000 would increase by 33%. This is without vehicular pollution and destruction of the greenfield countryside. Future generations would never forgive us. There is indeed a unity of protest that surpasses politics. Hampshire County Councillor Jan Warwick and indeed Councillor Jackie Porter reflect the anger of Winchester residents. For all parties to stand together and win the day, regardless of politics, would be refreshing and for the good of Winchester and its residents. Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
Non-political. This is from Christopher Gordon. Sir, it's very welcome that Winchester Cathedral, the Theatre Royal and Watercress Line have all succeeded in obtaining substantial emergency grants to help them through their current inability to earn income because of the pandemic. It's surprising, however, to learn from Steve Brine MP's latest self-published Winchester Post that he seems to be claiming the credit for these three awards, heading MP delivers again, with three suitably posed location photos out of the 22 pictures featuring him in the four-page handout. I'm intrigued. The application process to the Culture Recovery Fund was remitted by the government to arm's-length intermediaries, Arts Council England, operating under Royal Charter since 1946, specifically to avoid political interference, and the National Heritage Lottery Fund. Under current extreme circumstances, while these independent bodies are exposed to any recriminations for decisions that might be questionable or go wrong, the Culture Ministry has, most unusually, aggregated to itself the right to announce the winners. Oliver Dowden, probably the most crassly interventionist culture secretary since the unlamented David Mellor almost 30 years ago, issued a boorish threat to beneficiaries about the consequences of failure to promulgate praise for the government widely enough. To crown that, our MP now seems to assume that he can claim personal responsibility for successful local applications to the fund. If he did intervene in the independent process for local advantage, then we need to know that the long-standing rules have been bent so that we can all make more use of this possibility in future. The creative sector, predominantly consisting of overlooked freelancers, has been particularly badly affected by the COVID-19 crisis and needs all the help it can get. Its 2019 value to this country, according to ONS, more than £111 billion, the second largest contributor to the UK economy. Meanwhile, the EU cultural funding for England that has averaged around £40 million annually over the last 10 years has disappeared, with no current plans to make up for this loss of funding after Brexit. Christopher Gordon, Corns Close, Winchester.
And this next letter is also headed non-political. I'm writing to you as the chair of the King's Barton Residents Association about the petition that was referenced in the Hampshire Chronicle article of November the 19th. The King's Barton Residents Association is an independent organisation working with individuals of all political persuasions for the good of this community. Our petition has captured the interest of political parties, to which King's Barton Residents Association is not affiliated, as we are a non-political organisation, but we welcome the support of our MP and our councillors of any party for our petition. Since forming our association in 2018, we regularly attend the King's Barton Forum and have advocated for better lighting, footpath improvements and road safety on Andover Road. The tragic fatal pedestrian accident in January 2020 that occurred on Andover Road near Halls Farm Close reinforced the need to focus on the safety of this main artery into town. Following correspondence with Hampshire County Council earlier in the year, we were told that the number of people crossing at this location in early March did not justify the installation of a light-controlled crossing. We've pointed out that children from Hairstock and Week cross Andover Road to reach Barton Farm Academy School, and children from King's Barton and Headbourne Worthy cross Andover Road to reach Henry Beaufort School and other local schools and nurseries. So far, we've not been successful in gaining County Council support for a controlled crossing and reduced speed limit from 50 miles an hour to 30. We decided to start a petition to formally request the necessary safety improvements and have gained the support of several organisations and local groups, as your article reports. Not being affiliated with any political party, we wish our petition to remain independent. And so, after collecting signatures on paper from our closest residents and due to COVID-19 restrictions, we're now offering interested and concerned Winchester residents the opportunity to sign an online version of the petition at www.change.org/p/ Hampshire County Council petition to make Andover Road safer. I suppose I should say that again. www.change.org/p/ and it's all hyphenated together, a Hampshire County Council petition to make Andover Road safer. And that comes from Katerina Zucker, chair of the King Barton's Residents Association of Ventor Drive, Winchester.
And now we have City Bridge from Geraldine Buchanan. Sir, following on from Peter Lydiard's letter in the Hampshire Chronicle on November the 19th about the very sensible idea of building a pedestrian bridge alongside the City Bridge, it might be of interest that the City Bridge will be 200 years old in 2021. It would seem appropriate for such a much-needed project to be completed in that year, and the inscription on the bridge, with the date of its building and St Swithin's connection to one of its predecessors, to be recut. It is becoming indecipherable. That's from Geraldine Buchanan of Elm Road, Fulford, Winchester. And we have a lovely picture accompanying this this letter. They've added a lovely picture of sunshine on the City Bridge itself in its glorious stonework.
This from Nick Pierce is a plea for us to be considerate. Sir, after multiple incidents with dogs and irresponsible owners in Winchester over the past few months, I feel compelled to write to you in the hope of raising awareness and encouraging people to be more considerate. Dogs. At times it feels like those of us who don't own one or more are in the minority in Winchester. They're everywhere. Personally, I don't have a problem with dogs, but I do take issue with irresponsible owners. It might be difficult for some to comprehend, but dogs can be intimidating for children and adults too, yes, even the small, fluffy, fashionable ones. On several occasions, my three-year-old son and I have been accosted by dogs let loose and out of control by their owners, left covered in mud and, in the worst instance, on the floor with a dog on top of him, my terrified child. Accidents happen, I get it, but perhaps more disturbing has been the reaction of the dog owners. No apology and zero effort made to regain control of their animal. Typically, these encounters have been made on the public footpaths at or near River Park, when dogs should be on a lead and under control, and families free to walk without being intimidated. Secondly, the age-old problem of dog fouling. A popular trend seems to be joggers with dogs, headphones in and seemingly unaware that their animal has left a fresh poo in their wake and carrying on their merry way. Get outside, be healthy and enjoy the fresh air, but take some responsibility and don't spoil it for the rest of us. Our parks and open spaces are there to be enjoyed by all, even more so during this latest period of lockdown. So please, control your dog, clean up after your dog, be considerate. Nick Pierce, Francis Gardens, Abbots Barton.
And Cleo Barton writes about traffic danger. Sir, yet again we have been victim of Albrook Hill. Tonight, my partner's car has been hit badly while it was parked outside our house on Albrook Hill. This road is getting increasingly more and more dangerous, with drivers not observing the law. Daily we have drivers mounting the pavement outside our house, speeding up and down the hill, and more regularly now, cars are being damaged. It needs to stop. As a young family with a one-year-old and a dog, it scares us to leave the gate, as often angry drivers are mounting the pavement. The road needs a solution. And that's from Cleo Barton of Albrook Hill, Albrook.
And an alternative name for the possible new developments is offered by Liz Gardner of Monk's Road, Hyde. Royal Down Garden Village, Pittsville.
Abuse of power. Sir, Prime Minister Johnson is personally responsible for lowering ethical standards in public life by his decisions on Dominic Cummings, Robert Jenrick and Priti Patel, together with his plan to break international law and breaches of processes on government procurement contracts and public appointments. Are we surprised Sadly not. Should be what we be worried? You're darn tootin'. The USA shows us where such corrosive abuses of power can lead. And that's from Stephen Percy of Easton, Winchester.
Rupert Pitt of St Cross Road recommends that we should cycle more. Sir, Dr Burwood seems to find cyclists annoying. See Chronicle letter October 22nd. One comment was, cycling has adverse consequences on narrow roads into this small city. I think cars are antisocial for the amount of space they take up, the noise and the pollution. The Dutch Cycling News stated, a car moving at 50 kilometres per hour requires 140 square metres of road space. A bicycle moving at 15 kilometres per hour requires 5 square metres of road space. Thus, cars take up 28 times more space than cycles. Cars take up a great deal of room, and not only when driving. Car parks also take up a great deal of land, which could be used better for housing or retail. If we used cars less and cycled more, then we could use the space not taken up by cars on two busy roads for pedestrians, and Winchester would return to being a city for residents and visitors. We would avoid noise, pollution and a poor use of land. Our ability to move about would give us more peace of mind if there were fewer cars, as we would not be worried that we would be hit by one. I'd like a congestion charge in Winchester, as in the centre up St George Street, North Walls and Jury Street. That's Rupert Pitt.
And finally, Richard, have you got a little and finally for us?
This is a letter entitled No Fun. In response to the last paragraph of Roger Mannin's Silver Hill letter, Chronicle November 19th, since when has prostitution been a topic for fun? Christine Moore, Park Road, Winchester.
If you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or you can email news at hampshirechronicle, all one word, .co.uk. Or you could also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Well, you could even drop in when you're in Winchester, but I don't think that's a good idea at the moment. Now, moving on, we have a bit of editorial comment. The editor heads up his article this week with a good piece of planning news. I wonder what that could be about. A few days after the Chronicle revealed proposals for the single housing development in the city's history by local farmer Nick Russell, there was some good planning news. The City Council comprehensively turned down a plan for 5,000 houses as at Royal Down Garden Village, but for one house on the Water Garden off Colebrook Street. The decision by planning officers followed more than 1,000 objections from local people as well as from around the world. There were two letters of support, including from a man in Basingstoke who shares the applicant's surname. The garden's owner, Alan Stone, has to decide whether to appeal and press on with his ambition to make a sizeable amount of money out of the space. The Chronicle hopes he does not. In an ideal world, the City Council would buy the garden off him and look after it in the public interest. In the meantime, it would probably be too much to hope for that the garden could have some decent maintenance, a pruning of the tree to reveal the crucial view of the cathedral, and open the pond to the sky, and a clean of the bust. And now first person. Ron Allison writes about, as ever our NHS responds. Richard, tell us more.
Thank you. The front page of last week's Chronicle made depressing and worrying reading. many readers, I'm sure, will have been horrified at the headline. Proposal for huge 5,000 home town. And at the thought of such a development being cited between Winchester and Hursley. I play no part in deciding the editorial policies of this newspaper, and as I write, I have no idea how the ongoing story will be covered in this current issue. But covered it will be, with no doubt an overflowing letters page or two. A strong start to the anti-response came last week from Winchester's MP Steve Brine, who comments on Royal Down Garden Village brochure as if it was went straight to the point. On first reading, you could well believe this is an April Fool, but it is deadly serious and must be resisted by Winchester City Council. Hampshire County Council will no doubt become involved as well. And if, like many of us, you are not sure who our representatives on the two authorities are, now will be a good time to find out. Time for local democracy in action. More houses are needed, but surely only in appropriate sites. Such local issues, however controversial, have not been dominating the news in recent times. That honour goes to the coronavirus and raises concerns extending well beyond the remit of any local authority. Here I declare a particular interest as my wife is a matron in the clinical research facility at Southampton's General Hospital and as such is very much involved in the work in progress there, which is developing in conjunction with Oxford University. It's exciting for all concerned, but with the watchwords thoroughness and patience always in mind, and which is routine for the teams, along with patient safety and scientific rigour. I've written in the past in this column about the NHS being one of the country's success stories. Today my admiration continues. I well remember the build-up to the introduction of the NHS in 1948 by Clement Attlee's Labour government. The British Medical Association, the Doctors' Union, was utterly against it, but such was Labour's majority in the Commons at the time that there was no stopping it. Surely it must be accepted over the years millions who might otherwise have gone without treatment definitely benefited. If an organisation can be described as national treasure, surely the NHS qualifies. Further tests lie ahead. Almost all the medics I've listened to in recent days agree this coming winter the NHS will be under as much pressure as it has ever experienced in its demanding life thus far. I'm sure that once again the NHS will perform brilliantly and rise to the occasion.
And now the letter from Westminster. The Winchester MP Steve Brine has a few words for us. December the 3rd may be the first day of the rest of our lives, but for many it will feel a lot like the day before as the COVID nightmare continues. Yes, we will be out of the second phase of national restrictions, but we move seamlessly into the regional tiers, and we should now know where Hampshire will land within that. For some, in essential retail, for instance, it will be an intense period between now and Christmas to try and save their year. For others, there's nothing left to save, and for some self-employed workers, it's a case of having to start over after being overlooked too many times. There's nothing good about a pandemic, unless you're Amazon, perhaps. There is, however, a genuine sense this week that we've turned a COVID corner as rapid flow testing becomes a reality and the third vaccine from our own Oxford team reports positive news from stage 3 trials. Locally, I'm being briefed by the NHS on how we will be ready for rapid rollout via a COVID vaccine hub in Portsmouth. Britain is good at this stuff, and never have we needed it to be better. Equally, we need the public to take up this vaccine, so please be ready, willing and able when the call comes. I understand there will be vaccine worries and dangerous misinformation about them, but I've worked closely in the past with the regulator, the MHRA, and constituents can be confident that they will interrogate the data robustly before granting any licence. It may have been done in record time to help us turn the corner, but our system prevents them being cut. In the meantime, especially for those of us under 50, we need to be patient, and I stand by what I said to the Prime Minister in the Commons again this week, to help us get safely through to the spring, when the cavalry reaches us all. While it is good that test, access to which is now in a good place, and trace, they're very persistent, is working, much better, I remain concerned about isolate, where figures are still nowhere near good enough. There is no point spending vast sums and expounding great energy to identify positive cases and trace their contacts if infectious people are not staying out of circulation. Payments to support those isolating, alongside rapid daily testing, will help. But if we're to avoid the next ruinous cycle of lockdown and release before the vaccine truly saves us, we need to see New York figures of isolation, which are circa 90% compared to our 40%. And yes, we the public have our share of responsibility for this. Secondly, something completely different. Because I have tried throughout this to bring constituents a flavour of the other things going on that deserve to be aired. I have spoken in Parliament in recent weeks about our ongoing battle with breast cancer and the push to drive down smoking rates. They're not necessarily connected, but as a former cancer minister, these are subjects I feel passionate about, and I hope I can add a little to the debate. That's Steve Brine, MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford. And now we have a little selection of pieces from Belgarum. Richard.
Thank you. And the first one is entitled Just One of the Little Crosses. The field of poppies in the outer close will soon be removed for another year. It's easy to think it just honours those who gave their lives in the First and Second World Wars. But among the poignant little wooden crosses was one for a more recent casualty. Captain Richard Holmes lived in Winchester and was serving in the parachute regiment in Iraq when he was killed in February 2006. He'd married his wife Kate shortly before leaving. Speaking at the time, Lieutenant Colonel James Chisel, his commanding officer, said, "Charming, compassionate and bright, Richard was one of the parachute regiment's rising stars. He brought a warm humour and enormous professionalism to all he touched. He excelled as a young commander with both the parachute regiment and the Highlanders and was deeply respected by those he led. As a reflection of his ability and character, he was due to leave us later this year to take up a prestigious instructor's post as a platoon commander at the Royal Military Academy, Sandhurst. Kind, fun and warm-hearted, he was a pleasure to be with and always saw the lighter side of life. With his passing, the Parachute Regiment has lost a fine soldier and officer. Our thoughts are with his wife, family and many friends." And in contrast is another item called Alfred's New Drink. After 8 years of making beer, a Winchester brewery is diversifying. Alfred's Brewery has been in the city since 2012, when brewer Steve Haig started making real ale after years of working in other breweries. The brewery has grown and moved to larger premises on Eastern Lane. Now it's released its first soft drink, using spring water from a source in the New Forest. Steve said, "I've always wanted to make a tasty alternative. We're pleased how the first one has come together so well. With the help of our friends at New Forest Spring Water, I wanted to create something that was naturally refreshing and a little different from the more standard options currently available. Alfred Brewery's sparkling orange and dry ginger is now ready to sample. However, this is not the only reason Steve created this drink. His two children always wanted him to make something that they could try. His daughter Emily says, I absolutely love the mix of fizzy orange and ginger. Refreshing and tasty. And finally, on this day, which is, I know now, is called Black Friday. The reason for that escaped me for many years. A charity for the homeless is calling on local people to ditch Black Friday and instead support the sustainable and affordable Buy Nothing New Day on November the 27th. In Mayors, Hampshire, which has its recycling bank in Bar End, is encouraging customers to shop more ethically, in contrast to Black Friday, which sees customers rush to make impulse purchases as retailers slash prices. One way to do that is to buy pre-loved, upcycled gifts from independent local charities. It sells a range of good quality second-hand items, including furniture, clothing and bric-a-brac. The funds generated helps the mayors to provide a home, work and support and training for people who've experienced homelessness or social exclusion. Chief Executive Nigel Samuel said, when you shop with the mayors, you not only support ex-homeless people in our community, you also benefit the local environment by helping us recycle over 450 tonnes of furniture a year.
Thank you, Richard. Now, I'm afraid we don't have any historical items this week. I expect the Chronicle staff couldn't get into their archives. And I'm afraid we don't have anything, any what's on either, because I rather suspect there isn't anything on in the region. But we do have lighting up times. So starting on Saturday the 28th of November, the sun will set at 4:03 p.m. And on Wednesday the 2nd of December, the sun will rise at 7:49 a.m. and will set at 4:01 p.m. And now on to items of general news. Richard, would you like to kick us off?
Yes, I thought this rather curious item about COVID-19. Sorry about that. But it tells us that Alsford has the fastest C19 rise. New cases of COVID-19 appear to be slackening in Winchester District, except for a hotspot in Alsford. Whilst the Winchester District has seen its smallest increase in some time, with only 14 new cases, the market town is now the worst area of Hampshire, with COVID figures way above the national average. The area around Alsford has seen a COVID spike, with Perrins School last Wednesday becoming the first secondary school to close completely in central and southern Hampshire. Head teacher Steve Jones took the decision with 50 staff and 750 pupils to isolate. It reopens on December the 3rd. Also way above the national average is Winchester North and Sparsholt, with 24 new cases. The Alsford area also includes Northington, Byton, Gundleton, Titchbourne, Cheriton, Bishop Sutton, Bramdean, Shawley, Boworth and Kilmiston. Thank you. Winchester District comprises more than the city and is the council area which stretches from Mitchell-Dever in the north to Southwark in the south, from Sparsholt in the west to Bramdean in the east. A County Council spokesperson said, while the number of cases in Alsford and the rest of the Winchester District has indeed risen since the start of October, this is broadly in line with the trend for the whole of Hampshire. When considering the number of cases in smaller geographical locations with small populations, such as individual towns, care needs to be taken in interpreting the data, because just a few additional cases can seem to have a big impact on the overall figures. We continue to closely monitor the trends in both Alsford and across Hampshire and will take any appropriate action required in response to concerns where higher transmission rates may be occurring. Meanwhile, four more people are reported to have died in Hampshire of COVID-19 in the last 24 hours. The death toll in the county area was 838 on Tuesday. Oh dear.
Progress at City's new leisure centre. Much has been made since work started at the Garrison Ground in March 2019. According to the City Council's strategic director, its doors are still due to swing open next spring, but an exact date has yet to be decided. Chas Bradfield told a Sports Forum meeting, "As you can see, the progress made has been spectacular, but it wouldn't be responsible to set an exact date right now. There are too many variables." Speaking on the initial £38 million budget for the project, he added, "We are currently within, but there is still some work to be done, and COVID and its delays must be taken into account. These haven't been nearly as bad as they could have been, but there is no guarantee." At the same meeting, Matt Dubber of construction contractors Wilmot Dixon gave an update. He detailed the energy-saving techniques that the centre will feature. "We have installed 849 square metres of photovoltaic panels, which equates to a 140-kilowatt system," he said. "This would translate to the PV system being able to power around 600 running machines or 1 million kettles. It is designed such that energy produced will be consumed by the building, but we can also feed back into the grid if there is excess power produced. The glass being installed within the building main reception is Oculux Evo, which have glass fibres inserted within the inner panes. The glass fibres help reduce solar heat gain and the subsequent cooling required in the building. When the centre opens, it will be run by operators, everyone active." Representing the company, Alison Sutherland said that alongside the River Park Leisure Centre, staff that will be transferring, many more positions are still available. She added, "We still need to hire additional lifeguards, gym coaches, trainers, physiotherapists and more. Our launch plan is still being finalised and will be completely finished when we know exactly what will be permitted when the centre opens." In recent months, the City Council has constructed an access roundabout and crossing in Bar End Road. It has also put new bus stops on Barfield Close, added cycle lanes near the centre, and installed new street lighting along Domham Road. Totems, finger post signs and traffic directional signs to direct people to the centre have all been ordered. Wilmot Dixon will give another update on the progress at the next Winchester City Council Sports Forum meeting. Members of the public will be able to attend and ask questions. And the article is accompanied by a few photos. One is a rather dull one of a bit of paved path. There's a picture of the swimming pool, which almost looks finished. It's being tiled at the moment. And a great huge sports hall. And an aerial picture taken from a drone that shows the whole site, where with Bar End Road on the left and the running track on the far right. And the building does look indeed quite extensive.
Ah. Well, I'm afraid I've got another item about COVID-19 here, but I think it's as well to know. Second wave hits hospitals. Residents have been urged to follow the rules as health bosses said the second wave of the pandemic has now hit Hampshire hospitals. A total of 108 COVID patients are currently being treated at hospitals in Winchester and Basingstoke. This is the highest number of patients the two hospitals have recorded since September, according to Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust. Alex Whitfield, the Trust's chief executive, has urged residents to comply with the coronavirus rules, as she said the second wave has now hit the Royal Hampshire County Hospital and the Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital. She said at the moment 54 COVID patients are being treated at each of the two hospitals run by the Trust. It comes as Ms. Whitfield confirmed that during the first wave, the highest number of COVID patients recorded in one day at both hospitals was 155. She said both hospitals are expected to be busier than last winter, but much will depend on people's behaviour. However, she said that the number of COVID admissions has started to drop, with 65 recorded 2 weeks ago and 52 after the past 7 days. but measures to face a second wave of the pandemic are being rolled out. Hospital staff are set to be tested twice a week as part of a national scheme, while patients at both hospitals are currently being tested on day 1, 3 and 5 of their stay. Miss Whitfield also said that they are looking at using the saliva test currently trialled in Southampton, but it's yet to be confirmed. It comes as last week it was announced that the saliva testing programme is going to be rolled out across the south. Elective surgeries, which were put on hold during the first wave, are expected to continue during the second wave thanks to the use of private facilities such as the BMI Sarum Road Hospital in Winchester and the Hampshire Clinic in Basingstoke. But the cost of the private provision has not yet been revealed. It comes as the first wave has caused a backlog of elective surgeries, but the number of people currently on a waiting list is yet to be revealed. However, Miss Whitfield said it is not possible to exclude that elective surgeries will have to be put on hold again over the coming months. But she stressed that urgent care and cancer treatment will continue to be available. Additional air scrubbers are being used across hospitals and more digital services are now available for patients. Miss Whitfield said the Trust is also providing support to hospital staff. She confirmed that the Trust is being supported by agency staff, but the cost is yet to be revealed. However, Ms. Whitfield said that the use of agency staff has not increased because of the pandemic. She praised the work done by hospital staff over the past months and thanked residents for the sacrifices that they are making.
Man stole £1.2 million by selling fake machinery. A con man who stole more than £1.2 million and illegally opened 76 separate bank accounts has been jailed. George Edward Costash, 34, of Winchester, sold caravans, tractors and heavy plant machinery, which did not exist, to sellers from across the globe. Winchester Crown Court heard that he got his victims to pay into bank accounts that had been opened using counterfeit European identification documents. Costash admitted fraud by false representation across Hampshire, Dorset and Surrey, all between September 1, 2018 and July 3, 2020. The court also heard that during a search of an address at which Costash resided, 23 counterfeit European identification documents and passports were located and linked these to the fraudulent activity. Costash of Sussex Street was found guilty of 4 counts of fraud, 1 count of possession of articles for use in fraud, and 1 count of money laundering. He was handed a 4-year custodial sentence for money laundering, with 4 years concurrent for committing fraud and 2 years concurrent for the possession of 23 counterfeit identification documents. Detective Sergeant Marcus Mills said, "With the support of a wide range of national and international partners, an offender has been brought to justice and handed a substantial custodial sentence. This was a complex investigation which has yielded a fantastic result. The cost to Costash's victims has been potentially life-changing, both financially and psychologically, so we are pleased to see that he is no longer a threat to the local communities. In handing down a lengthy sentence, we hope that this will act as a future deterrent to those individuals looking to exploit both banking institutes and vulnerable people."
This item is headed, "Residents aiming to rewild their neighbourhood." You always hear about deforestation, greenery being removed and the countryside being developed. But Wilder Hyde, a group of volunteers, are doing the opposite. Their aim is to re-green as much of Hyde and Abbots Barton as possible by planting wildflowers and various seeds. The group formed in February when Sarah Perrin approached her friends and neighbours who are interested in nature conservation. She said, "We had our first meeting in a local pub and we decided on various projects we would like to tackle. We also want to extend our efforts, where possible, to the neighbouring areas of Abbots Barton." Inspired by actions in Wilder, Portsmouth, in April we held a nature swap on four residential roads in Hyde. This involved having an area outside a house where we left flower seeds, plants, bird seed, bamboo, etc. for people to help themselves to and also leave things for others. A local teenager designed a poster advertising the swap as part of her Duke of Edinburgh's award. This worked really well and we received lots of positive feedback from local residents. Locals said they really enjoyed sharing and receiving items to improve their gardens for nature. They also enjoyed the interaction with neighbours, albeit at a social distance. Sounds like a jolly good excuse not to do the weeding, doesn't it? And I've got a picture here of two happy-looking people who are spreading green hay in Abbots Barton, through which I suppose the place gets rewilded.
And here comes the future. Electric vehicle charging points. Winchester City Council has installed the first of its 33 electric vehicle charging points across the district. Councillor Linda Murphy unveiled the equipment in Denmead, which is part of the council's electric vehicle charging strategy, writes Sam Hatherley. The rest of the points are expected to be installed by Christmas. Councillor Murphy said, "We are delighted that the first of our electric vehicle charging points is now up and running. This work supports our continued dedication to green travel and puts Winchester District at the front line of Hampshire's electric vehicle infrastructure planning. We welcome and actively encourage those with electric vehicles to use the new facilities and help the district achieve its ambitious goal of being a carbon neutral district by 2030. Further work is being undertaken to roll out more charge points in future parking facilities and to serve residential areas which do not have access to private off-road parking." And there is a photograph of Councillor Murphy holding the business end of the electric hose, standing next to what actually looks like a gas boiler on a road sign.
This item is called Care Home Staff Move One Step Nearer to Victory. Now, it seems to me an encouraging story after all the terrible times that care homes have been through in recent months. Three staff members at a Winchester care home have reached the finals of a prestigious competition. Anna Lazar, Bali Sahota and Amelia Slater all work at Brendon Care Park Road. They've been nominated in three separate categories for the Great British Care Awards and have each moved one step closer to victory. Home manager Erin Langley said, "I'm incredibly proud of Anna, Bali and Amelia. The compassion, kindness and commitment they display each and every day is truly inspiring." The team at Brendon Care Park Road has worked tirelessly in what has been a difficult year, and I am in awe of them all, so it's really exciting to celebrate some of the many positive things which are taking place within the home. Anna Lazar, Deputy Manager, is a finalist in the Good Nurse Award category. She's been recognised for her caring and selfless nature with the residents. "I'm very proud to work for such an amazing company as Brendon Care that always puts residents' interests first, and also in Park Road I feel very valued and very well supported by my manager and my team at all times," she said. I feel like we're all a little family and we support each other, especially through this difficult time that we're now facing." Receptionist Bali Sahota is close to winning the Ancillary Worker Award. She joined the home in 2019 and is recognised for her dedication and commitment. Bali said, "It's a wonderful place to work. We're a great team and we have the loveliest residents. Each day I hear, I enjoy the energy we all bring to Park Road and it drives me to work harder and, most importantly, to help everyone the best I can." In the Frontline Leaders Award, Senior Care Assistant Amelia Slater has reached the final. She's recognised for her clinical skills and person-centred approach to the residents. "I learn something new every day, and every day is different. I'm so pleased to be working with such an amazing team." The winners will be announced at a gala evening in April 2021.
Driver distracted by frazzles caused crash. A driver who caused a head-on crash that left a couple with serious injuries was likely to have been distracted by eating a packet of Frazzles. Lawrence Walford was on the wrong side of the road as he drove his grey BMW around a blind bend on the A32 near West Meon on May the 14th, 2019. He came face to face with a Toyota being driven by Richard Cousins and his wife Joanne in the passenger seat. Winchester Crown Court heard on Friday. In a split second, Mr. Cousins and Walford attempted, but failed, to avoid a collision. Prosecuting Charles Gabb told the court that Mrs. Cousins, 52, came to immediately after the crash and thought her husband was dead. The couple suffered serious injuries, Mrs. Cousins still dealing with the pain of a broken back and ribs, and Mr. Cousins, aged 61, suffering with pain in his leg from where the seat belt ripped through his trousers on impact. Minutes before the crash occurred, Walford of Pope's Lane, Lower Upham, had gone to the Meon Hut service station on the A32-A272 crossroads, where he bought petrol, sweets, and a packet of Frazzles. The court was told that eyewitnesses then saw the BMW being driven by the 48-year-old travelling on the wrong side of the road. Walford then disappeared out of sight, but it is not known whether he returned to the correct carriageway at any point before the crash. Following the crash, police inspected the scene, including the father of three's car, and Mr. Gabb said, "There in the front passenger footwell was an open bag of Frazzles." The defendant, having got back into his car, wanted the crisps there and then. They were found to be on the floor. Judge Hill, Assistant Judge Advocate General, was told that Walford was unconscious of the crash and has no memory of what took place. Walford had also not been drinking prior to the crash. He pleaded guilty during an earlier hearing at Crown Court to two counts of causing injury by dangerous driving. In mitigation, Thomas Evans said he and his fellow directors have had to take a significant pay cut because of the COVID-19 pandemic, adding that the family are currently facing hardship. In sentencing, Judge Hill said the defendant ought to feel greatly indebted to the victims, as they had said they did not wish him to be given a custodial sentence. Walford was given a 12-month sentence, suspended for 2 years, and has been disqualified from driving for 2 years. He must also pay £500 court costs.
Residents' fears over delays at A31 checkpoint. Hauliers must be ready to follow new rules for Brexit next year, port bosses have warned, or face being turned away to avoid leaving Portsmouth overrun. Members of Hampshire's Local Resilience Forum revealed they are confident in preparations to prevent tailbacks along the M275 into Portsmouth International Port from January the 1st, but those plans must be adhered to. To minimise delays at the port, if lorries don't have the correct documentation, two checkpoints have been established en route. The first will be along the A31 between Winchester and Alresford for vehicles travelling from London. The site will be capable of checking up to 235 lorries, and signs along the M25 will ask drivers to travel along the M3 to get there. That means they will have to double back at the Ladycroft roundabout near Alresford. The A31 was revamped in 2018 prior to Brexit to create a lorry park on the dual carriageway if there are delays at Portsmouth. Local people are concerned about the impact on their lives. Christina Fernley of Ores Meadow on the A31 said, "We will be directly and negatively affected by the HGV park planned for Ashford Road."
Call 111 for A&E. Patients are being asked to book A&E appointments at Winchester Hospital by calling 111 to cut waiting times and reduce spread of COVID, health bosses have said. The scheme, NHS 111 First, is up and running at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, providing pre-booked arrival slots to the A&E unit. It is intended to cut waiting times for urgent care and direct people straight to the most appropriate service for their needs. Dr. Lara Alloway, Chief Medical Officer at Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, which runs Worcester and Basingstoke hospitals, as well as Andover, said, "The COVID-19 pandemic has dramatically changed how we provide care, and that starts right at the front doors of our hospitals in our emergency departments. In North and Mid Hampshire, we are now asking all patients with an urgent but not serious or life-threatening injury to contact NHS 111 first, instead of arriving unannounced at the emergency department. Using NHS 111 first helps us to keep patients safe and makes it as easy as possible for people to be put directly in touch with the right clinical service for them, first time. Our emergency departments are open at all times, and anyone experiencing a medical emergency should still call 999. Patients who arrive at A&E without contacting NHS 111 first will still receive high-quality emergency care.
Well, here's an exciting item. Pothole spending. Hampshire County Council is one of the highest spenders in the UK when it comes to repairing potholes. According to research by Money Supermarket, the authority which is responsible for Winchester's roads has spent £11,528.31. No, that's not right. I beg your pardon. It's £11,528.31 since January 2017. That's rather different, isn't it? Data shows that this is the ninth highest total in the country. In comparison, Stockport repeated the lowest pothole spend of just £24,000.
Risk of hose pipe ban evaporates. A water company has revealed that it has dropped plans for a hose pipe ban in Hampshire for now. Southern Water revealed that after weeks of significant rainfall, it has stopped plans to apply to the Environmental Agency, EA, for a drought permit. This comes after bosses at the firm looked at this option in August over fears of dropping water levels in the River Test. According to Southern Water's website, from October the 1st to the 6th, around 100 millimetres of rain poured into the river, 125% of the month's long-term average. The announcement added, since then, the month has gone on to receive between 175% and 235% of its long-term average rainfall overall, with some of the higher totals falling in Hampshire. Water Resources Policy and Regulation Manager at the utility company, Nigel Hepworth, said, "We'd like to thank all our customers in Southampton and the surrounding area for being careful with their water use throughout the year. As a result of their considerate water use and recent rainfall, we've now agreed with the Environment Agency to formally stand down our preparations for a drought permit, as there's no risk we'll need one this winter."
Unfair charge. Families who live in villages are being disadvantaged and having to spend hundreds of pounds to send their children to school, according to one mother. Michaela Jeans has launched a petition calling on Hampshire County Council to reverse a decision to charge parents whose children under the age of five need transport to get to their nearest school. Currently, pupils who are five, the compulsory school age, and over, are given free transport if their nearest school is more than 2 miles away. But children who start school at the age of four are not entitled. Instead, Hampshire County Council charges for a privileged seat. This came to a shock, as a shock to Mum Michaela, who lives in Sutton Scotney and has to send her children to South Wanston Primary School, as there's not a school in the village. While her six-year-old son Milo is able to ride the bus for free, she has to pay £200 a term for her daughter Margot, aged four, to take the same transport or drive her to the school following the bus. Michaela says she's seen some parents put one child on the bus and follow the bus with their younger child to school. It's not treating everyone equally. And they, the Hampshire County Council, are thinking wealthy parents will pay, then it will top the bus up. She added, there's a free place for Margot at school, but there isn't one for her on the bus to get there. Hampshire County Council were contacted for a comment, but did not respond.
Derelict Sparks Garden Centre to be redeveloped for housing. Approval has been given for a derelict garden centre to be replaced by seven affordable houses in a Winchester suburb. Vivid Houses and owner John Waterfield applied for permission for the glass houses of the former Sparks business site and a row of garages. Some 8 objections were received from residents in Mount View Road who have complained about overlooking and overdevelopment. Neighbour Roger Farthing said the scheme would impact on his privacy and quality of life. It is out of character and will add nothing positive. Oliver's Battery Parish Council also objected. Councillor David Kirkby said the scheme was overdevelopment of a small plot. He raised the issue of the loss of parking, which has been used by the nearby parade of shops for many years, and that their loss would affect their viability. He added, the owner has sought for 10 years to redevelop for residential. Allowing the building to become derelict has been helpful to this end. City Councillor Brian Lamming said he was worried about the dangers of traffic accessing Oliver's Battery Road with poor sightlines. Jason Murphy, architect with Vivid Homes, said of the informal parking, the fact that people have used it is a benefit, but it is private land and it could be taken away at some point. Councillors raised the issue of why the site had not been marketed for other commercial or community uses. Planning officer Verity Murphy said, the viability report said it was extremely unlikely to be able to be used for another commercial use. Given the impact of COVID-19 on the retail industry, I don't think there is a reasonable prospect for any other use other than residential. But Councillor Ruffle said that it should have been marketed. Councillor Lamming said, there is no evidence of marketing. I struggle with how you get out of the site because of the hedges. They are extremely high and visibility is poor. It's an accident waiting to happen. But councillors voted by 5-2 to approve the scheme.
Garage was built in the wrong place. City councillors have with disappointment approved a garage in a historical location in Alresford that's been built in the wrong place. Although they've been snubbed, they're not going to do anything about it. Mr and Mrs Peter Young have built a garage 60 centimetres from where it should have been built at Broadgate Lodge off Broad Street, despite being warned by council officers. Councillors have said they are getting tired of seeing retrospective applications for buildings that have already been built. The planning committee head heard that neighbour James Elkins responded immediately to the building being built not in accordance with planning permission and alerted the council. He told the planning committee last Thursday that a misplaced building was not a trivial issue, but seriously affected the setting of his home, a Grade 2 listed, but dating from the 17th century. He told the committee that he'd warned the enforcement team immediately, but nothing had been done. Mr Eakins, along with 19 objections, was supported by local councillor Margot Power, who said the garage has no respect for the setting and should not be permitted. Philip Piper, agent for the Young, said the garage had to be moved because of brick piers on an adjoining wall that had not been included on the original planning application. He said, this has no detrimental impact and should be approved. Local council, Russell Gordon-Smith, said, we're in a conservation area of one of the nicest towns in Hampshire. I'm extremely unhappy about the way it's been carried out. It's detracting from a very sensitive location. He questioned the competence of the architect who seemed not to have spotted the brick piers. The councillors queried why the work carried on when officers had raised concerns. Mr Piper said council enforcement officer Oliver Dempster said the changes would probably be acceptable. Committee chairman Therese Evans said the building was now much more in your face, but added it would be unreasonable to expect Mr Young to take it down. Councillor David McLean agreed, but added, I'm disappointed someone felt they could go ahead without obeying City Council rules on planning applications. He said the council should review its rules to gain some teeth. It's not been a good week for the councillors on the planning committee after the council was thumped with costs by a planning inspector for refusing an application at a property on Main Road, Colden Common. The councillors had ignored their planning officer's advice.
Book proceeds to hospice. A Hampshire author is donating all proceeds from her new book to charity. Naomi House and Jack's Place will receive the money made by Gilly Stacey's first ever anthology. The Barton Stacey writer has already sold a few copies and hopes to help fill the hole in the hospice's fundraising cause by coronavirus. She said, I began writing when I was a child, aged 12. I moved here in 2009 from my home county of Lancashire. I have had a few published poems in previous years, and this is my first book of poetry. The book is £4.99, and all proceeds will be donated to Naomi House and Jack's Place here in Hampshire, which is a hospice for young adults and children. The book is available from me at the moment, and if people would like more information and details on how to buy one, I can be reached on my email address. So contact Gilly on jlb73@hotmail.co.uk. That's Gilly, jlb73@hotmail.co.uk. Naomi House and Jack's Place are the hospices for children and young people in the Wessex region. The hospices are located at Sutton Scotney near Winchester.
Fewer bus journeys than 5 years ago, stats show. Fewer local bus journeys are made in Hampshire than 5 years ago, new figures reveal. In Hampshire, 28.9 million passenger journeys were made in 2019-20, down from 32.2 million in 2014-15. At the same time, bus fares have increased more than the rate of inflation and were up 2.5% from 2018 last year. Department for Transport says the number of bus journeys in 2019-20 was impacted by COVID-19, with restrictions imposed on March the 23rd and people discouraged from taking public transport. But a spokeswoman added the five-year downward trend did show there was more that can be done to deliver reliable and regular bus services for both new and existing passengers. A Department for Transport spokeswoman said, this will build on our significant investment, which includes more than £900 million of emergency funding to keep buses moving throughout the pandemic. Hampshire County Council has confirmed it will provide continuity for those who use local bus and community transport services by supporting bus operators during the pandemic. Councillor Rob Humby, Deputy Leader and Executive Member for Economic Transport and Environment, said, before COVID-19... passenger numbers in Hampshire were doing well, and investment in providing a comfortable and quality service as a viable alternative to car travel, such as onboard Wi-Fi and contactless payments, were paying off. It's important we offer some protection to the income of local bus operators to help them at this time, so that when demand increases again, these services will be there to play a part in Hampshire's green recovery. This is particularly vital in the case of the local bus services used by school and college students. National guidance urges local authorities to continue to support bus and coach operators for local bus contract and reimbursement at the same levels as before the coronavirus outbreak. And Hampshire County Council will certainly comply with this request.
NIMBY objections. Councillors will visit a controversial site of a proposed home on the banks of the River Meon. Miles Hutchings and Hannah Nettle want to build a three-bedroom home on part of a back garden at Bankhouse, High Street, West Meon. But the application has sparked strong opposition. Richard Lowe, agent for the applicant, told the planning committee that Ms Nettle had grown up in the village and now wished to settle there. The proposal has sparked hostility, with a raft of NIMBY objections, loss of a view, loss of rental income, false claims of overlooking and loss of light, industrial warehouse architecture. The objections have at times been vituperative, abusive, personal and defamatory. Members of the applicant's family have been accosted in the street. Neil March of Southern Panning Practice, speaking on behalf of neighbours, spoke of the impact on wildlife with otters and water voles recently returning to the area. In total, there have been 15 objections. Councillor Hugh Lumby said he had received an email from one neighbour which said, "The whole process has had a detrimental impact on us all. The worry, the loss of privacy and dramatic loss of value to my own and neighbours' houses." The committee voted by 6-2 to visit the site. Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week. But before we go, another reminder that Liz Legrisse is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number, again, is 01962 861229. That's 861229. Thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, to our editors, Anne and team, and of course, many thanks to our hard-working reader, Richard.
Goodbye.
And from me, Barbara, until the next time, goodbye. Now, just a reminder, would you pop the memory stick in the wallet as soon as you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible? Have a lovely week. Goodbye.